Blog Talk Radio.
What is the black tax? We'll talk about that tonight, and we'll be back in a couple of minutes. Our roots began in Africa, where we enjoyed self-determination, freedom, and sovereignty. Peace, families. Welcome to the Us Win, the Us Lifting Us weekly radio program that airs every Thursday evening from 9 o'clock p.m. to 10 o'clock p.m. Eastern Time. Dare to Win is the place where we have sobering conversation about the economic plight of Black people and the imperative that we build the global economic machinery that will free us and once again put us on the path of making history. We at Us Lifting Us have developed an exact methodology on how to build this machinery and pass it forward to our children and future generations. Call 929-477-2789. Press the number 1 on your phone when you want to make a comment or ask a question. If you want to listen on your computer, go to www.usliftingus.com. Scroll down to the bottom of the homepage, click on the Dare to Win button, then click on Listen Live. My name is Sister Q, and joining me for this evening's discussion is Brother Z, who, like me, is a member of ULU. Brother Z I need you to raise your hand so I know who you are.
Yes, yes. You should be able to hear me. I think I'm already unmuted. Can you hear me?
Oh, okay. Awesome. Good. Thank you for joining us tonight, Brother Z. To begin with, please, how are you
doing? I'm doing pretty good. I had a busy day, and I feel kind of, you know, relaxed after a nice busy day. I probably won't be turning in until 1 a.m.
Oh, okay. All right. So I'd like you to begin by telling the family a little bit about yourself.
Oh, man. I hate to talk about myself.
Everybody does, really.
let me talk about attributes that coincide with things we're interested in now.
Okay.
Since 19, I have been what some may call a philanthropist. I've just been a very generous guy from that age, having my own office at 19, eager to show other people how to succeed as an entrepreneur. So here in Durham, North Carolina, I was kind of around quite a few ambitious folk, you know, people that I grew up with. I could drop names like Dexter Scott. We had quite a few DJs in the area who moved on to do other things, and he's one of those people who left the scene right out of high school and started using clubs to, you know, to give a place for college kids and people fresh out of school to go to and enjoy themselves. And he just blossomed from there. Because he was a colleague of mine, we wrestled together, and I had an opportunity to pick his brain. I also became interested in becoming an entrepreneur or becoming a business person. So I jumped on that. It took me across the East Coast for a little while. All the while looking to help people get involved, which landed me with somewhat of a team today. And my team is involved in real estate, now day trading, as well as selling cars and real estate, stuff like that. So bringing it all up to today, one of the things that were always present was a taste for philosophy or consciousness and solutions for the black community. Of course, you know, Farrakhan was loud during my younger years, and so we were always thinking about solutions regarding the things that he was talking about when it came to things that we dealt with. So I collected ideas, viewpoints as I grew older. And until recently, I started the Black Tax Agency around 2017. I think at that point, I won't even mention all the other organizations and building groups that I had started, but this one led me to the point where after listening to Dr. Amos Wilson, I was really ready to do some of the things that I collected. And I want to include the best things that I collected, which was to simply get straight to the point and dissolve the instabilities that lingered in our lives. I really wanted to get rid of that, and I felt like if we took an approach where we got rid of those things, it would simultaneously eliminate the racism that we would suffer from, the disenfranchisement, you know, the exclusion that we were always facing. So I felt like if we focused on that, that would give us a serious knockout punch in regards to finding some solutions. And so that's what the Black Tax Agency is all about. It has a sting to our start off because we really won't be getting anything done, meaning we won't mature until we have 8 million people on the email list so that we can begin our work. And that is the work of dissolving the instabilities in our lives.
Okay. So let me ask you a question, because I've heard of, you know, the Black Tax for years, but what exactly do people mean when they talk about the Black Tax? Not your agency, but, you know, the Black Tax.
Right.
Black Tax.
In Africa, people are familiar with Black Tax as the cost of taking care of their relatives, you know, not just the cost, you know, of their cost of living personally, but usually, you know, they look at it as what they do to keep their parents from spending money, you know, their aunties or uncles from spending money. So that's an aspect that is well known in Africa. But as we transition over here to America, there's another tone for black tax, and that is the things that we struggle and suffer under through the exclusion, through economic exclusion. And so in America, we become familiar with black tax in that regard. So those are the things that people were already familiar with when it comes to black tax prior to the Black Tax Agency.
Okay. So now tell us a little bit more about the Black Tax Agency. You did mention a little bit about how you came to start it, but you can go into a little more detail with that and what your intent is to accomplish with the Black Tax Agency.
Well, you know how they say, aim big, aim high, the sky's the limit. I think I went all the way through heaven and come out on the other side when it comes to this vision and his viewpoint, because we're talking paradise at this point. So that's the ultimate goal. And when I say paradise, I'm talking about a world where we no longer use money, a world where we aren't being forced to do things just to get access to some resources. We learn how to control our emotions, and we use our intelligence to make sure that our basic necessities and everything else that we need is always ready and available. So that's the ultimate goal for the Black Tax Agency, and we want to inch ourselves there once we have the 8 million people by sending out proposals to the 8 million so that they can decide if they want to put a dollar or two, just a dollar or two, because we have a lot of proposals coming through the pipeline, dealing with putting services and assets in our communities that we can access even when we don't have any money. So that's what we want to do, to get ourselves familiar with what we can do even when we don't have any money. We want to be able to use this model, and I hope I'm not going too fast for you, but we want to be able to use this model to get ourselves on the land that we're always talking about, learning the routines for managing this farmland and distributing the food to the neighborhoods that we built. I'm talking about making sure that we're not paying for electricity, we're not paying for rent, there is no mortgage. Like everything that we need, we're building a community around the resources that are going to get us those things. So that's what that model is going to do for us. We want to cover the cost to get ourselves in those positions, because right now we're not being hired to get into those positions. So we want to get into the positions where we're going to be able to feed ourselves without having to deal with the monetary system. We want to be able to build our homes and our neighborhoods without having to deal with the monetary system, right? And the list is long. We want to get back to codependency. We want to get back to self-sufficiency. And I know that's something that we're always talking about, but we feel like we have a surefire plan and a playbook for getting there.
Right. Now, that sounds very interesting to me, because I can see that, you know, the idea that if we position ourselves properly, money becomes no longer an object, you know. So I'm glad to hear you talking in that manner, because most
appreciate that.
Cannot.
I got a lot to say on it.
Because most people cannot even fathom the idea, no money. So, well, and you have a lot more to say on it. Say something. You can say, talk a bit more how you came to that. I mean, because not only how you came to that, but how do people respond when you say a world with no money, or a, I don't want to say the word community, but
I get mixed responses.
Okay.
I get mixed responses because a lot of people apparently have been conditioned to think that the world would be chaotic without the use of money. And so I have had to teach myself to simply have a discussion where I only present the strongest viewpoints on the table and kind of sit back and wait and see if things would make sense, you know, to the people who have been digesting lies for so long. For one, the monetary system, a lot of people don't know why we use money. And I know that sounds almost like it doesn't make sense, but I have gained confidence in saying that after having plenty of discussions with people where I pop the question, why do we use money? And so the answers are usually because we have to pay bills, because nothing in the world is for free, you know. So at that point, I usually present to the people that the reason we use money is because resources are controlled by an immoral folk, people with an immoral, malevolent mentality who don't want to share with you and pretty much has a high infatuation with others depending on them. And so you don't have access to basic necessities unless you do the kind of work that they want you to do when they want you to do it, right? And what you get after providing this type of work is money, which is a way for them to say what your work is worth and how much of the resources you will be able to have access to. That's what the money does. But the real reason we use that money is because we have failed to keep going after a relationship with the resources of the planet for ourselves. So we're sitting here relying on a people who all over the globe now has a mentality that at whatever city you enter, you have to get in, find some work, right, and play according to our terms, right? Now, as much as the conscious people and the African diaspora talk about being self-sufficient, right? We're always talking about, I mean, Pan-Africanism has this serious dialogue for unity and coming together, but somehow we keep letting a relationship with the resources of the planet slip past our hands. And we would have the unity that it seems like we have in mind when we talk about it if we simply would have access to the resources that we need, but we allow ourselves to play a game in the monetary world where money is supposed to continue to exchange without us taking advantage of using the money to get into these certain positions. What I mean by that is to say we have a lot of Africans whose occupation is to mine, but they're mining for these companies that are only giving them pennies per hour. Why is it taking so long for us to build a community for the miners? We're talking about stability right now, right? So that they can mine for us and not for money. This is taking us all the way back to people not really knowing why we use money, but the simple and usually brain-boggling answer to that question is because we don't have a relationship with the resources of the earth.
Yes, and we're conditioned to equate everything with money. For example, when we want something, we'll say, I need $200 so I can buy a couch.
Right.
Okay. But what I really want is the couch. I don't want the $200. All right, but I don't know how to ask for a couch, so I asked for $200 to get a couch. So I can understand what you're saying about us being conditioned to think in terms of having to get money to do the things that we desire to do. I'm going to invite people to join the conversation, Brother.
Excellent.
So if you would like to join the conversation, and you're on the phone, please, you know, press 1 on your phone, and I'll open the line so that you can make your comment or ask your question. We do have someone on. Let's see. Let me open this up. Caller with the last four digits, 3440. Please state your name, where you're calling from, ask your question, or make your comment. Thank you.
Thank you, and greetings to you, Sister Q, also Brother Z. It's a pleasure listening to the conversation and the topic. I can't help but imagine, you know, I was running through my mind the question that the statement that Sister Q made about we want the couch, but the money, it seems like the money is sort of like the middle person or the middle thing to getting the couch.
Uh-huh.
But I wanted to ask you, I got sort of like two questions. One is the significance, if any, with the currency that is the digital currency, which is becoming extremely popularized. If you could talk about that in the context of you know, sort of like a moneyless society, it's a currency. Provide a medium of exchange, and its intent, as I understand it, was to remove a middle figure. The second question is you raise the thing about trying to acquire 8 million. That's, you know, at least a fifth of, I guess, the population of us. And what is this 8 million does, and how does that relate to, you know, what you see as moving towards this environment in which we eliminate money. And I'll stand back and listen, and thanks again for your input and the conversation.
What can you say? Glad to hear from you.
Thanks, Brother Shabaka.
I'm in Miami, Florida.
Okay.
I'm in Miami, Florida. We're getting right into it. The 8 million people will be responding to emails. These emails are proposals, for example, stating that we have found a team of nurses or a team of repairmen, or we have some vehicles, trucks, vans, and cars that we want to purchase. Each of these items that I'm listing will come through as separate emails talking about the services that we'll be able to put into the community, or material assets that we will be able to put in the community. And what the 8 million will do is to decide per email if they want to put $1 or $2 towards it to manifest it. What that means, for an example, is that we will have, let's say, a repairman, an auto mechanic repairman crew of 25 people in this country running a shop in a particular place, let's just say Texas, all right, Texas. And so if your car breaks down, if we contribute to this, 8 million people decide to put in $2. Nobody just wanted to do one. Everybody just did two. That's $16 million to put a mega mechanic shop in Texas with a crew that's going to take care of us for the next 2 or 3 years, right? All their salaries are in their account. The supplies that we anticipate for them to use, all that's in the account, right? So when your car breaks down, you pick up a phone, they come and tow your car from Florida all the way back to Texas, repair it, bring it back to you, and without you having to pay a single dime. This is not one of those things where you're paying a monthly fee like this commercial you see that has become pretty popular. I think it's Car Shield or something like that, right? No, we're prepaying for these services, all types of services, to exist amongst us as a way to stamp out the instabilities that we are liable to face in our lives. So if you happen to receive an email as one of the 8 million that says we're going to put an orthodontist office in New Jersey, right, and they're going to be servicing the community for the next 3 years, right, you'll be able to get braces if you never had an opportunity to get it done without having to spend a single penny. And it costs to go back to get them checked up on, retightened, and stuff like that, right? So we'll have that in the community. Things as simple as transportation. So this is what the 8 million will be doing. They would essentially be a funding force. So I hope that answers that particular aspect of the question. Let me jump on cryptocurrency real quick. Cryptocurrency, for me, based on the viewpoints that I have swirling around in my head, is kind of scary because already as it was, I thought that the change shortage was a hint towards crippling people's ability to use material for money. Material was used as a medium of exchange in our supermarkets, on the streets, and stuff like that. So it seemed like it was nearly a good way to crack down on keeping people from having that ability to have transactions amongst themselves. And with that being gone, you can see a type of control ready to creep in, where only the digital currency that they had to offer was how you would be able to buy or sell something. Number one, where are you going to get the currency from if you don't have a job? So we had a shortage of change, and you already know that if you go and get a job, right, they're going to connect you with a debit card or some type of digital currency. So when we look at the cryptocurrency world, which in my sight is powered by the monetary system in the first place, I'm still associating that with the fear of the ultimate control that they can have over us, which is the control through resources. Now, they can simply say, if you want access to this or access to that, now you're going to have to be over here in this area. You're going to have to come to this camp, or you're going to have to, offer your services over here, or we're going to, turn off your lights. You're not going to have water. You're not going to have food in these particular grocery stores in your community unless you do those things. So I'm thinking cryptocurrency, while it seems exciting right now with people reserving these so-called currencies digitally in their boxes, it seems like there's a way to still render a people cashless, if I can get away with saying that, So I'm not all that. It's an opportunity. A lot of people are making money, but the ultimate risk is very scary for me, and it's hard for me to be excited about it when I really want us to get away from the monetary system altogether. And the cryptocurrency still lies on a platform of a medium of exchange. It still lies on the platform as a currency. So I don't even promote or teach about bartering or trading the way they teach it to us in most of the educational platforms that we have around us. They're usually telling us that we bartered as ancient indigenous people, or as ancient Egyptian folk, that we bartered and trade, and I just see that as being a lie, a lie that a lot of people have digested. If we can think about a group of people living together who are self-sufficient and operating off of codependency, I don't see where if you investigate that, just using your imagination for a little while, that these people would have any reason whatsoever to trade amongst themselves, because you would have groups all throughout the community doing different things, and they're all bringing quality to the community. That it would be ridiculous to be there in the community, looking at each other in the face, talking about I'll trade you this for that, instead of just setting up shops or resource points where people in the community have simply brought things and left them there for people of the community to come and get and bring back to their personal abodes, their immediate residential facilities. So today we call them stores, and we go in there and we use money to get what we want and what we need, and then come back home. But I believe that people who live together will naturally discover their talents and the things that they can do for the community, and set it up in such a way that they wouldn't have to actually trade. And with that experience in mind, even as they look towards other communities or tribes or whatever the viewpoint may be, I think that they will be eager enough to extend this particular practice. So we're still looking at a situation where they wouldn't be eager to trade, but simply to welcome you and assist you. And that's what the people did. and ancient indigenous people assisted one another. They didn't trade. I think I covered it.
Brother Shabaka, anything else?
No, thank you for.
Oh, sorry.
Thank you.
I cut you off, Brother Shabaka. What did you say? What were you saying?
No, he covered it and answered the questions well. Thank you.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you, Brother Shabaka.
One of the things that you were talking about is the lack of, that there's no necessity for trade, that people see what each, what the community, it sounds to me like what you're saying is we see what the community needs, and then the gaps are filled by the people who are talented in that regard.
Is, yes, ma'am.
That basically what you're saying.
Yes, ma'am. We're intelligent enough to do just that. We can take tally of the products that we are, the things that we produce. We can take tally of the things that we can consume. We can take tally of when to take things from our storage facilities, how long to keep them in the storage facilities. Even if we're using recycle techniques, you know, we're intelligent enough to apply all of those things amongst ourselves to demonstrate some abundance.
Mm-hmm. Okay. I'm saying that I can I understand what you're saying, and I can see that as a possible reality. So now let me ask you: you are a member of ULU. How do you see the Black Tax and the ULU model meshing or coinciding?
Right. One of the reasons I even joined Us Lifting Us was because I saw, I looked into the activities that they had going on, the message that they had on their website, and I could see that they were interested in the basic thing we all should have an interest in, which is being self-sufficient. We need unity. We have to be able to come together. And we want to get away from all the damage that is facing us through this capitalistic world, right? So I said, let me get in here, right, and speak to people who seem like they've been doing this for a while, right, so I can learn how to better convey the message that I need to convey. So ULU is, when I got in here, I met quite a few people, Brother Shabaka being one of them, people who are very articulate and seem to be very, very much familiar with the task at hand and the language. I was very impressed by the language after having a few conference calls with the family. And I feel like they are right on track for doing some of the same things that I have discovered I am interested in. And so one of the things I hope to be able to do is to discover a very sharp way to increase a way to gain activity. So I know there's a lot of groups out here and people are doing all kinds of things, but one of the things that Baba Hakima always says is that we are fragmented. Right. So I usually keep that in mind when I think about what I'm doing and how it's going to be in sync with what ULU is doing, every other organization that has these interests. I can't just sit on the outside looking in, asking questions that people probably don't want to tell me about unless I'm a part of their organizations. So it wasn't easy deciding to join ULU because at the time I had about five other organizations that I was in association with. Now, after about probably a few months of dealing with ULU, I walked away from looking at joining the other organization. One, because ULU would put you to work.
Okay.
So, So I enjoyed, number one, being put to use. So I said, okay, so if these guys will put me to work, let me go ahead and walk away from the others, pretty much sharpen this pencil right here. It's like a one-stop shop, you know.
Uh-huh.
So one of the yeah. things I see that ULU, or that I really like to see ULU do is to grow, right? So I would love uh-huh. to be a part of when we have that boost. In my own dealings with building groups, I have boosted a group from 2,000 to 60,000. That was through social media, but we're dealing mm-hmm. with something a little different, and I would love to see how we introduce a spike in growth with what with the interest that Us Lifting Us has.
Okay. Good. So you said ULU put you to work. That's not all you said. You said you were looking at about five organizations. What I'm trying to, I have an ulterior motive here right now. People who listen to the call, you know, it's like they're interested in ULU enough to listen to the call. And they haven't gone to the length of joining ULU or committing the $50 for the annual
right.
fee. And they have not, of course, then even, you know, they haven't bought a unit so they could participate in what ULU is doing as far as, you know, sharing in the profits or, you know, that kind of stuff. So
yeah.
I guess the question to you is, how would you suggest to those people come aboard, you know, to just go ahead and invest the $50 and allow themselves to be put to work so they can see how they can help ULU grow? Is that something that you think would encourage people to join ULU?
I do think that those are aspects that will help people wanting to join ULU. Those are attributes that will attract people. But I think we're at a different juncture where I've looked through the membership and we have a lot of potent people as members,
mm-hmm.
and they have their own organizations and they're doing things in their community. So I think in order to spark a wave that will help ULU gain more members is that if we do something to incite the people who are very much occupied right now as members in ULU to do things to highlight still here, and that while you're doing the things in your community to assist members in your community, that we still have a mechanism amongst us that will serve us well if we empower it. And I'm talking about Us Lifting Us. We have a situation that is very common amongst all organizations, and that is we really need a funding force. So when we have the kind of people who are interested, and in every generation we get more people who are interested in this kind of thing, and a lot of them are coming straight through college, right? And so if we can stay focused on making sure that we establish this funding force so that we can have the things that we want as an organization and do the things that we want as an organization, I think that will add to what you were just speaking about, that will add to the attributes for attracting people. to join ULU. And I hope that makes some sense.
Yes, it does. It does make sense. I'm going to invite people to join us again. If you'd like to just join the conversation, please call 929-477-2789 and press the number 1 on your phone to make a comment or to ask a question. Tonight we're talking with Brother Z, who is a member of ULU, and he has an organization called Black Tax Agency. Tell us a little bit more about the Black Tax, how people can, if they want to, do you have a website? Can they, are you on social media? Can they contact you by email or what, if they're interested in getting more information about that?
Okay, I appreciate that. Yes. The blacktaxagency.com, www.blacktaxagency.com. It's BLACKTAX agency, AGENCY.com. There's a menu there that says get on the email list. You want to go there and you want to get on the email list because we need this 8 million. We need to be able to prove to ourselves that we can establish what I call a cohesive foundation. And I do a lot of talking about this cohesive foundation because find that we don't necessarily know what unity is. We let it stand naked as a term, right? And so there's so many attributes. There's so many attributes that stay weak when it comes to unity, and one of them is urgency. Urgency stays weak. It never has a life form in the world of context to flex. It doesn't flex. We need to be able to wake up this urgency about unity. Maybe one of the reasons why the urgency is not there is because we're not often talking about what it is we're coming together to do. What is it we're trying to team play about? So I know we're not putting together a basketball team. It's not a football team, you know.
Okay.
So what are we trying to team up and do? So it seems like to me that after listening to a lot of our esteemed speakers, Marcus Garvey being one, Dr. Amos Wilson being another, even Farrakhan himself, as often as he always talks about self-sufficiency, how we need to come together and stuff, what is it that's keeping us from not getting up and coming together? So I go into that on the website, and I have a list of pages just under the About page alone, right, that goes into what's going on with us when it comes to unity. So we have to know that we have to be oriented with certain things because we have to have the same mindset. That's number one. That's going to remove a little bit of that weight that must be crushing urgency to death. Agency needs to raise its head and flaunt and let us know the way. And so we need to know that we're heading for a world where we're not going to be beat to death by instabilities. We favor the thing that is the most viablest thing in the world, in the universe, and that's stability. Uh-huh. I don't care if you're really talking about you got a spaceship in your backyard and you're about to fly to another planet and you're going to come back and check on us and see how well we're doing. Well, wherever you're going, when you get there, right, you're going to have to face the reality, which is whether you are stable there or not. So whether we are having visitors, if they get here, right, they're going to be faced with the challenge of stability. It's the most precious thing in the universe, stability. So we want to make sure we start eliminating these instabilities. That's what we want to be able to unite for. So when I talk about paradise, I be dead serious about this thing. On Facebook, you know, I regard myself as the Paradise Warrior, which is where I do most of my Facebook lives, just talking about how we're teaming up to do something about this, right? So I speak about these things, I write about these things so that we can always have something to go back to and look at in case we forget. What did he say about this? What's the mindset we're supposed to have? I write about it. I make sure that it's on platforms that are easy to access, from my website to my Facebook groups, all of which you can have access to. If you get on the email list, I send out links, even a certificate to show proof that you are now giving back to the black community as a collective. It's hard to give back to the black community better than a collective can, right? So just make sure you include that in your repertoire. Make sure you're giving back as a collective. And that's one of the things that the 8 million people are going to be doing. So while we're waiting to accomplish this cohesive foundation for ourselves, proving to the world that we can come together, 8 million deep on the email list, we are gathering a collection of information that presents our mindset so that everyone can grow and become familiar with this, the viewpoints and the idea and the urgency that we all should be tapping into.
Right.
Black taxation.
You know, So with Ulu also us lifting us, it's a collective. You know, we stress the necessity of pooling our resources, monetary, mental, spiritual, all of our various, an economic powerhouse. And it seems to me that although Ulu talks about profit sharing and, you know, plowing money back into the businesses and they bring forth more profit and the
right.
people that are members of Ulu, you know, share in the profit. It seems to me that taking that to the ultimate limit will bring Ulu into a place where money is not necessary, because we'll have all the businesses and be doing everything we need to do, and therefore we take advantage of everything that's there. And as individuals, or as living men and women and children, we do not necessarily have to have the money. We just keep putting it back into the collective and let that blossom. And, you know, it becomes, to me, it seems like everybody, the money is the umbrella under which everybody else is taken care of. I don't know if that you understand
what I'm doing.
You know, so that Ulu's intent is, we have I think it's 1% of all the I forgot what to call it. It's income, but it's, well, all of the money that flows through the black community in the U.S.
Right.
1%, starting with the U.S., 1%. So if we took that amount of money and did everything we needed to do with it, the people would not need to be concerned about money, because everything is cycling back, like a, more like a Taurus than a infinity. But so to me, actually, your black tax agency and Ulu are steps on the same path, it sounds to me. Is that why you joined Ulu? Is that what you see with that? There's very little difference between what you're trying to accomplish and what Ulu is trying to accomplish. Or intend to accomplish. Say that again.
I say there are definitely differences here.
Okay.
My initial greatest value for joining Ulu was Baba Hakima. After speaking with him, I think it's because the way his mind works. So that was my initial greatest value for joining Ulu, because of his intelligence and his viewpoints and his ambition to make a move. So later I discovered that he assembled a team of like-minded people who I also wanted to have the opportunity to speak with whenever I could. And so that has become a reality. But the differences are still there. I can't just make a move as ambitious as I am to establish a platform for the Black Tax Agency and begin conveying the message as many ways as possible without speaking to people like Baba Hakima, without speaking to people in our community. I had to go somewhere, you know, and get some consensus, some feedback, you know, and some quality feedback. It was some learning time. You know, it's not like, you know, I stayed beside the brightest minds, people who just live, get up in the morning ready to unite the Black community and stay on it all day, every day. So I have to do things through social media, like connect with Baba Hakima, Uplifting Us, join these organizations, speak with people. Clubhouse has been a new fascination of mine. And so I do these things so that I can better prepare a message, and hopefully, I mean, the same way that Baba Hakima found himself a family and like-minded crew, that the Black Tax Agency can take on the same thing. Now, most importantly, I often like to tell people that the Black Tax Agency is not my – I literally came up with this after listening to everyone, having conversations in barbershops, you know, from morning to evening, being challenged on viewpoints and topics until we came up with the ultimate solution. And the ultimate solution, I'm super confident that removing instabilities in our lives kills a lot of the topics that are floating around in the discussions that we are having, and leave them out to simply be distractions.
Okay.
Catch my drift?
Okay. Okay, so again, if anybody would like to join the conversation, the number to call is 99-477-2789, and you can press the 1 on your keypad in order to raise your hand. Oh, we got a couple of people. Okay, so we're almost at the end of our hour, so let's take somebody here. Okay, caller with the last 4 digits, 8912, please state your name, where you're calling from, ask your question or make your comment. Thank you.
Yes, this is Brother Thurman. I'm an Uplifting Us member, and I'm calling from Virginia. And my question is, when you're talking about becoming, having the land and being self-sufficient and not needing money, considering the other people that's on the planet and the mindset that they're in currently, would there be any need for us to be doing trading amongst them with whatever we produce? And in part, would that be something that would be needed to, at least for a while, in order to assure that we not only have gotten self-sufficiency in terms of land and producing, but also that we position ourselves that we can maintain by having security of resources to maintain that land and everything. Thank you for the call tonight.
Thank you, Brother Thurman. I appreciate you.
Ashe.
Yeah, now straight to it. Right about the time we are able to stop using money, we shouldn't have to barter. And so let me see if I can make that make some sense. Bartering shares the same attribute and a mindset as using money in terms of I'm not going to give you this unless you can give me something of equal value. So that's not a sharing attitude. That's not an assisting attitude. That's not even an attitude that shows that you recognize that the community has your back, that the community brings a tremendous amount of value to you, so much that you don't even have to trade or look at another person like they don't have anything to offer, like they can't offer you anything. And that's what the bartering system or a desire to trade actually encompasses. So by the time we're done with using money, we shouldn't have a reason to barter or trade with anyone. And as we make our transition towards such a world, we're already going to be establishing ourselves as a people who have a relationship with the resources of the planet, to the point where our network and our distribution is set up so nice that we're only practicing codependency at this point, knowing full well what the community needs. And after knowing that, we actually get up, cater to that by doing the things to make sure that these particular things are met. Whatever the quota is, dealing with a particular item or resource or whatever it is, we make sure that we meet that quota when it comes to what the community. If we do things in blocks and say, well, this town is going to need this, this amount of wood, this amount of brick, this amount of wire, we simply make sure that it's met, you know. So that's kind of the way we take care of ourselves. And the community will, of course, access the things that they need. And we'll reserve room for, you know, extra things, unexpected things. That's what, you know, storage principle is all about. So I think that we'll be able to manage ourselves along with the resources in such a way that we wouldn't have to barter with people, no matter what their mindset is. And I close with this. Hopefully, by the time we get closer to leaving our monetary system alone, doing away with it for good, one of the reasons that it would have propelled us in that direction was influence. And what I mean by that is people who see us living without having to pay a mortgage, without having to pay rent, without having to pay electricity, without having to pay for food, and desire it, and they start choosing to prefer the same thing. So I end with that.
Okay, so let me. We have one more caller, so let's see if we can get them in right quick. Caller with the last four digits 8518. State your name, where you're calling from, and ask your question or make your comment. Thank you.
Yes, greetings to everyone on the call tonight. My name is Mr. Hill, and I'm calling out of Philadelphia. And I am very excited to hear this conversation tonight. I currently live in Philadelphia. This group is Chairman O'Malley's group. Am I correct?
No.
Hello? Oh, I'm sorry. Okay, well, I'm involved with a financial literacy company, and through this opportunity, we can put incredible income within our African families' households every week, provide residual income every month. And I don't want to say too much about it, but I'd like to give my phone number to the Brother Z and have him give me a call. And we need to be very urgent because we are hate war. My telephone number is 267-231-8518. 267-831-8518. Thank you for giving me the floor.
Thank you.
Okay. Thank you. Okay. And with that, we will end tonight's call. Thank you, Brother Z, for telling us, giving us so much information out about Black Tax Agency and offering us the opportunity to join you with that and showing us how that idea is not alien to the Ubu Uplifting Us Collective Economic Program. We want to thank everyone who joined tonight's conversation, and we'd like to invite you to join us again next Thursday night, 9 o'clock p.m., for another discussion on Us Dare to Win, the Us Lifting Us Thursday night radio program.
Peace.
Thank you.